mix what I like, what I like, what I like.
All right, what's up, world? Welcome to another edition of I Mix What I Like, imixwhatilike.org, at I Mix What I Like for all your relevant social media. Again, I'm Jared Ball. Just wanted to do a short podcast about the new Netflix documentary, Who Killed Malcolm X? Not going to say too much about it. I first want to just remind everybody that I co-edited a book called A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X with Dr. Todd Stephen Burroughs, and that a lot more about what I'm going to say here in brief can be found in discussion about our book of essays, criticism of Manning Marable's A Life of Reinvention. You can find a lot more about that at imixwhatilike.org, and I'll put a link to that along with this post here as well. So initially, what drew me to engage the book in 2012, A Life of Reinvention, put out by Viking Press, nominally attributed to the late Dr. Manning Marable. I was doing radio in Washington, D.C. Shout out to WPFW, 89.3 FM. And as we've talked a lot about, the interest was around the long-awaited, for those of us in Black Studies circles or just in political circles in general, we had been awaiting Manning Marable's release of this book, and it what we were thought was going to be the revealing of the lost chapters of Malcolm's autobiography. And almost immediately, beginning with Carl Evans and Zach Kondo, who does appear in this Netflix documentary, at least Kondo, that is, Baba Zach Kondo, we just started becoming, you know, alerted that there might be some issues or with what we thought Marable might have done here with what was being described by Henry Louis Gates, one of the executive producers of this Netflix documentary, as a definitive biography of Malcolm X. And my initial point for me was, how were Malcolm's politics being treated? Other people picked up on the claims of homosexuality. Other people picked up on what was really just a ton of poor interpretation, analysis, citation, misinterpretation. Peter Bailey, who shows up again in this Netflix piece, said that his interviews with Marable showed up in the book in ways that did not at all resemble what he had said in the original interviews. So there were all these problems. But for me, the issue primarily is generally always, how are the politics and ideas that governed Malcolm X, that inspired him, through which we became inspired by those ideas, you know, how are they being treated? And for me, What we saw in the book attributed to Manning Marable and what we see in this Netflix piece is very much the same. In part, of course, because the executive producer, one of which is Henry Louis Gates, ideologically in line with that final product of Marable's book, and the film says itself, thank you to Dr. Marable and several others. And then, of course, as we'll get to in a moment, includes interviews with many or several Marable adherents, or the adherents to the version of Malcolm produced in that book. And the simple point is that the ideas that Malcolm most worked with, the ideas with which he most worked and that he most advocated, are not at all discussed in the documentary any more than they were accurately discussed in the 600 pages of Manning Marable. And that was sort of my whole problem. Like, how are ideas of Pan-Africanism, nationalism, internationalism, socialism, communism, armed struggle, guerrilla warfare, anti-colonialism, where were all of these ideas, or in terms of Marable's book, how were they discussed and presented? And in terms of this documentary, where were they at all? And of course, the short answer is they were non-existent. In terms of the documentary, I don't think any of those terms were mentioned at all. Maybe a passing reference in part one to the word nationalism, but no discussion of what it meant or why it would have made Malcolm a threat to the state, and ultimately does a disservice, I think, to any discussion or investigation of Malcolm's assassination or his life. So Who Killed Malcolm X as a Netflix product does a lot of what Netflix products do. And by that, I just simply mean a product selected by Netflix to be claimed as a Netflix documentary or to be run and promoted on Netflix. This is something I've addressed that people can happily revisit if they like at imixwhatilike.org again in essays primarily about the 13th, Ava DuVernay's The 13th, and a few others that I'll link to here. And then there's a lot there from me and many others about just the general discussion of and critique of popular media and how, particularly in this case, Black radical politics appear in those spaces. So what's done in this documentary is very similar in that it diminishes all of the radical ideas that Malcolm X worked with by narrowing the focus only to really just one version of Malcolm X's assassination. And that is one that almost exclusively focuses on the Nation of Islam's involvement and the search for William Bradley, the shotgunning gunman. Who, spoiler alert, dies before the filmmaker can get him on camera. And it's presented as a big reveal, although everybody has known that Bradley was accused of being the main shotgun. Everybody has known for a long time that he has been in Newark, New Jersey, that he had appeared in the Cory Booker ad, which shows up in this documentary and is presented as new news. But by reducing it to an issue of the Nation of Islam, we get more or less just a sort of, as it's categorized on Netflix, just a crime drama series akin to any sort of Law and Order or some other sort of, the popular, true life murder file cases that we see a lot coming out in documentary form. And the importance of Malcolm X is sort of lost, specifically, again, because it's a narrow focus on Nation of Islam involvement in his assassination. But question of why don't go beyond a focus on, again, the Nation of Islam? Why would they have been upset? Why would Elijah Muhammad have been upset and maybe have wanted Malcolm assassinated? But even when there are passing references to the FBI, even when there are passing references and even one specific reference to the counterintelligence program or COINTELPRO, it's only brought up in reference to how much the surveillance conducted by the FBI alerts the audience of this documentary to what may have been the Nation of Islam's involvement in his assassination. In other words, there's never a question investigated in this documentary or raised really at all as to why would the FBI have been putting him under such surveillance for so many years, including many years before the end of his life and even many years before his rise to prominence within the Nation of Islam. He was already being investigated. By the way, this is part of the critique that we raise in our book of criticism of Manning Marable's book in several essays, but notably the one by political prisoner and former Black Panther Party member and supporter of the MOVE movement, Mumia Abu-Jamal, who describes the absence of reference to the counterintelligence program in Manning Marable's book as, quote, tragic. In part because when you deny reference to the counterintelligence program or you omit it from discussion or any sort of investigation, you cut off the serious questions as to why someone advocating the politics that Malcolm was advocating would be seen as a threat not only to the Nation of Islam, but to the New York police, to the federal government, to several agencies, not just the FBI, which gets some focus, but sort of the only state focus. I think the State Department is mentioned once. I don't think the CIA is mentioned at all. Defense intelligence and other intelligence agencies are not mentioned at all. Because then this would raise questions again to the next level. Why then would the state be upset with what Malcolm was doing? And what are the issues that the state or the federal government would have with people advocating Black nationalism, internationalism, socialism, Pan-Africanism, so, you know, all of these other isms? Why would, what would be the, and then that would of course lead to questions of, well, what is being protected? What isms are being protected? So unlike with this as is done with this documentary, the word capitalism isn't brought up, for instance. White supremacy is a phrase isn't brought up. All these other potential avenues of investigation aren't brought up as to what could be being protected by the state and what Malcolm's actual behavior could have been a threat to. For example, when the Organization for Afro-American Unity is brought up in the documentary, very little is discussed about what its principles are, what its goals were, how it related to the Organization of African Unity, what it meant in terms of it being a Pan-African organization, because other than in print on screen, them quoting Pan-Africanism, the phrase, as being part of the OAAU, there's no discussion of it. So the viewer, again, isn't drawn into a discussion of the politics of Malcolm X. They're redirected almost right back to a question of the narrow focus on the devolving relationship between Malcolm and the Nation of Islam. So again, I mentioned that Henry Louis Gates is one of the executive producers listed, and I think that's important for a number of reasons. And this is something that is taken up in many posts and broadcast that people can again find at imixwhatilike.org. But essentially, it goes back to him, for me at least, calling himself many years ago an intellectual entrepreneur or someone who is happy to make commercial product and profit from telling these stories and histories, which of course would require that they be narrowed and fit his politics. And if people know anything about his writings and his what you can even see on YouTube or hear on broadcasts, his true hostility towards so-called left-leaning politics, you could understand why some, or you might get an idea of at least a little bit of why some of the final product is as I'm describing it, and that is devoid of the radical politics that Malcolm was working with. And this has come up in discussions and debates I've had with, including with Peniel Joseph, who was one of the interviewees for this documentary, around his work on Malcolm X, and then later Kwame Ture doing exactly the same thing, and him saying he wants to be a protege or a new generation Henry Louis Gates, and to adopt that sort of model and approach to the study and history of Black people and political struggles. And as I've argued with him and debated, and of course people can again check that out at imixwhatilike.org, that I guess, you know, older debate we had some years ago, the argument was basically the same, that his presentation of Malcolm and the concept of Black power was one more akin to Nixon and conservative politics represented through Democratic Party electoral politics as, you know, being the far left expression of that, or the development of Black capitalist business, et cetera, and so forth, but specifically not to raise Black power or present these histories as Malcolm would have or was discussing him. It's not even about my own interpretation or subjectivity. It's about what's the objective record. And it's pretty clear that when you read or listen to Malcolm X, he wasn't presenting these ideas as I think they're being presented in this documentary or in the work previously in the several books by Peniel Joseph, which are, again, as I'm saying, or as he said, basically meant only to, quote, transform American democracy and not bring about true, genuine political and economic revolution, which, as Malcolm X defined in his own language, meant variations of Black nationalism, internationalism, socialism, Pan-Africanism, etc. Similarly, we see in this documentary Zahir Ali, who presents himself again as having come out of the intellectual and academic tree of Dr. Manning Marable and having worked with him on the Malcolm X project. And admitted, this is my bias here, but when he identifies himself as such on camera in the documentary, to me, you can see the moment where he struggles with saying that publicly, because I feel like he is reminded of maybe some of the potential engagements that he's avoided with me. The one time we did come into contact, communication with each other, or maybe he was being reminded of the criticism from many others. Well, he might have been reminded of when, for instance, he refused to come on my then radio program, where I had invited him and the entire Manning Marable Malcolm X Project team to come on my radio program and spend at least one, if not the full 2 hours that we had at the time, to answer a set of pre-delivered questions. I was going to so that everybody would be prepared to answer very specific questions and problems that I had with the book. and he refused to come on. And the one time we were, you know, came into, and we'll put the link along with this as well, that we did come into some contact was at a program now defunct, where the producer didn't tell him or us that he was not aware that we were going to be there. That is me and my eventual colleague, Dr. Burroughs, in terms of colleague on the book, critical of the Marable book. But after that, when in speaking with him, he again refused to come on, said he wanted to more or less protect his own brand by promoting the Marable book and not engaging in, you know, public debate about the book and having to defend its politics publicly. And there are at least two events, paid events, that he refused after accepting invitations once he found out I was going to participate. Only because I wanted to ask publicly about, you know, the politics of the book and what happened to them, and ask very specific questions about some of the scholarship in the book. And all of those details are, again, you can find, you know, in our many conversations and presentations about this at imixwhatilike.org, and of course, discussed at greater length in terms of the details of the argument and in our collection of essays, A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manny Marable's Malcolm X. So my point about, and really bringing all this up, is that similar to my other arguments about Netflix and popular commercial media presentation of these histories, is that they're brought up and the people who are brought on to discuss, to be the talking head pundits, are people who have either no expressed record of supporting the kinds of politics that Malcolm X represented and engaged, nor are they known as having come out of current existing political organizations and struggles that some would argue more represent those politics. Or they even are hostile to the politics, as I've argued is the case with Peniel Joseph in his presentation of Malcolm X and Kwame Ture, which I've argued with him directly and elsewhere. I come across as though he is hostile to the very ideas that inspired the people and movements he's claiming to praise and to document. I mean, in this documentary, you have other spokespeople, people I know and people that I even like and admire, including Herb Boyd and Peter Bailey, and Zach Kondo, who all appear in this documentary, although in truncated form. I find it amazing that Zach Kondo was sat down for an interview, and all they could glean from that interview are his limited conversation about the relationship between Malcolm and the Nation of Islam, and none of the broader context that he develops in his own book on the assassination, which is what brings him to these conversations, conspiracies, where he begins with the federal government and the state's incentive to, if nothing else, assist in the removal, neutralization, or assassination of Malcolm X. And then, of course, their complicity in aiding, you know, creating a context, as he argues, for the Nation of Islam's involvement. Peter Bailey is, you know, what I find interesting is that Zach Kondo and Peter Bailey are both contributors to our collection of essays and are presented in this documentary as having had no critique of the book that is referenced by Manning Marable, that is referenced as the core centerpiece of analysis. It's shown, the one moment our book is shown or brought up at all is on camera, where you see the narrator talking to his son and they go to the bookstore and our books are juxtaposed, pictured together. And this is why this is the featured image for this post. The brother picks up Manning Marable's book and says to his son, "This is the one I'm talking about." But it's interesting because he then interviews Zach Kondo and Peter Bailey, who both feature in our book. And Peter Bailey is very clear, again, when he says that his interviews with Manning Marable do not appear in the book as do not resemble what he actually said in real life. Zach Kondo, of course, contributed interviews and discussions in essays form with our book as well, in part because he was critical of what was discussed and how Malcolm was presented and the history was presented in Marable's book, and including the fact that Marable's book takes a lot from Kondo's work and represents it. And then I think on page 490 says that all books written in the 1990s were more or less irrelevant, which would include Kondo's and several others. So anyway, but by including them there, they're juxtaposed with Zahir Ali and Peniel Joseph as having been in support of this sort of narrative and version of Malcolm X when they're in print and in documented in their own work and with us as being critical of what Zahir Ali is taking credit for to be positioned to be in a Netflix documentary to help shape the narrative going forward of a Malcolm X. Similarly, again, you have Al Sharpton, you have Sean King, you have David Garrow, the famed historian, you have FBI Agent Fox, which I couldn't help thinking, Malcolm X famed line about the fox and the wolf. And you have this nice FBI agent smiling, Agent Fox, saying how nice, more or less the FBI is and would never have been, taken things too far. It's also interesting that you have Roz Baraka there, who mentions that his father, Amiri, and he, in fact, has a line where he says, like my father would say, and the one point that is left out, that this is sort of the core of my whole discussion here and in our broader work, is what Amiri Baraka said, that this is about an ideological attack on Malcolm's politics. And there's a great debate that we'll link as well that we have at imixwhatilike.org between him and Bill Fletcher. Defending the Marable book, where Amiri makes this great and precise point that what is presented as a definitive history of Malcolm X is really an ideological assault, a political assault on the radical ideas that Malcolm worked with and presented and inspired in many of us. By the way, when Peniel Joseph is on camera saying, talking about how Malcolm X said he fell in love with Muhammad Ali, you can clearly see that the way it's presented and shared is meant to as an allusion to the claim in Marable's book that is definitively stated by the end of the book that Malcolm X was in fact a homosexual. Again, for me, this is an irrelevant point. A, if Malcolm X had in fact been gay, it would not diminish his legacy or his importance one bit, and it would have nothing to do with why he was assassinated, which would have everything to do with what the federal government said made him a threat, that he was organizing black people along many of the isms, from nationalism to Pan-Africanism to at least radical critiques of capitalism, if not full-blown socialist and communist-supported ideals in terms of material redistribution of wealth. These are the reasons why he was a target and was ultimately assassinated. By the way, by not mentioning counterintelligence program in any meaningful way, the context is lost as to why Malcolm was again being targeted and why he might have been assassinated in conjunction with several other high-level political assassinations, with many have connected beyond just themselves. So if in fact, as others have pointed out, and again, we have many more of these discussions, including with Zach Kondo at imixwhatilike.org, if in fact that there was, Malcolm was just part of what would become known as the counterintelligence program in terms of being targeted, as was discussed in their own pages, then he was part of, he and his efforts were being targeted as part of a broader targeted assault by the federal government on any number of radical efforts, from the labor movement to socialists and communists to indigenous people to Chicanos and Latinx people to any number of radical efforts that the federal government saw as a threat, in part because of their defense of capitalism, of defense of white supremacy and imperialism and colonialism, required that they take these positions and bring tactics of international intelligence struggle back home. Hence the discussion of counterintelligence being described as, or COINTELPRO being described as bringing those efforts back home to internal conflicts within the United States. All right, look, I've gone a little longer than I had intended. Again, we have a lot more on this and related issues at imixwhatilike.org. You can follow me and us at imixwhatilike, and we invite you to do so. And as Fred Hampton used to say to you, we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. So peace, everybody.
I mix what I like, what I like, what I like, what I like, what I like.